If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Hi, this is Martha. Did you know that besides hosting Animal World, I'm also an animal behavior therapist and trainer with more than 40 years of professional experience? I work with you privately in your home or over the phone to help you understand your animal friends and resolve whatever behavior training or healing problems you've got going on. Most of my expertise is with cats and dogs, but I sometimes work with other types of animals as well. So whether it's puppies or kittens, adult dogs or cats, or elderly animal issues, I can help. Cats not using the litter box? Biting or scratching you or your furniture? Maybe they're fighting with each other or waking you up at night. I've got answers. Dogs barking too much, jumping or dragging you around the block on your walk? Does he have separation anxiety or chew up stuff he shouldn't? I've got answers. Whatever's going on with your animal friends, I will help you fix it. I am more than reasonably priced and often need to see you only once. I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so give me a call and bug my voicemail if you need immediate attention. You'll find me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258, and I'd love to hear from you.
Hi, this is Marilyn Milano. If you love animals, then please check out my new show, Love Has Many Faces, Tuesdays from 9 to 9:30 a.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150. I'll be talking with rescue groups, animal advocates, and other organizations that help animals, sharing their stories and giving our listeners some tangible ways in which they can help make a difference. That's Love Has Many Faces, Tuesdays at 9 a.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150, raising awareness, touching hearts, and saving animals' lives.
When the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk. Welcome you to the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got internet access. And the best way to pick up the stream is go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website and bring up the links that you need to stream the show. And, of course, you can find us on Facebook these days. Go to Facebook, search for Martha Norwalk's Animal World, and give us a like while you're there. Appreciate that. And check out all the great animal stories and posts and so forth that I put up there. Got a great collection going. And if you want to put a face with some names here in the studio, you can posted a photograph of Morley and Kathy getting ready for today's show. You'll find that on Facebook as well. Now, in the studio, I am delighted to say one of my newest best friends, Morley Venkatro from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga. He is the director of the Ananda Hatha Yoga Teacher Training Program and teaches great yoga classes and other classes as well. And I asked him to kind of put together a radio version of his very popular class, The Sacred Secrets of Hinduism and the Lineage of Yoga. And so we're just getting into that. And Morley, you were saying You know, we mentioned that how different it is doing the class on the radio than in person, because, and we should probably tell everybody, when you do this full class, because we all may want to sign up for it after today, it's normally a 3-night class, isn't it?
It's a 3-part class, and about 1.5 to 1 hour and 45 minutes per class. And we do it with PowerPoints, and I usually have some stories to tell, and there is some homework where you'd go ponder the meaning of the stories, and we kind of dissect it during the next class. Because one aspect of Hinduism, this is for any religious tradition, of course, but even more so in the Hindu tradition, is stories are used a lot to, and that'll be our next topic, as to symbolism and why that is. And
wonderful. Well, you know, stories are a great way to teach. And I know, because I'm just teaching the classes that I teach about communicating with animals and so forth last week and this coming week, you know, at East West. And I teach via stories, so totally relate to that. But I guess the point of this is that it is ordinarily a 3-part class, and you're able to use a lot of visual aids and so forth, and all that PowerPoint stuff. So you just have to do this in your imagination, folks. And but I'm imagining that we'll probably all want to join your the next time you do this class. So you left us before we closed out the hour with some questions. You did give us some homework over the break.
Yes, I did.
And is that where we're going to pick up now?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first question was, who founded Hinduism and when?
Yes.
And I, of course, gave you my quick answer. Well, I could just parrot back what you said. You were talked about when the British came in to India, and they had to kind of call it something, so the name was there, but obviously the practices were already existed. So the
practices have existed for a long time, and within the Hindu tradition, if you really go into it and dig into the orthodoxy and try and figure out who founded it, the answer is, well, many people. When did they found it? Long time ago. That's about the best you can
get. So your answer is maybe 4,000 plus years old was kind of the answer to that.
Yes.
In terms of when.
But let me make it slightly more satisfactory than that.
Okay.
There is the inner tradition of Hinduism says that it was founded, or founded is an artificial term where we insist on being linear. But let's put ourselves into that framework and say, yes, it was founded sometime at a higher age, sometime during a higher age. And when the ages transitioned into a lower age, the collective wisdom which was hanging around was codified into a set of practices. That's kind of the entire thing about when it was founded. So the sense we get from that is that what we see as Hindu tradition is something that has been perceived in a very refined state of mind, experienced, say the experience of God. Something, for example, that Emerson talked about very, very eloquently in his essays, that this direct perception, which in a way is subordinate to every other form of religious writing or talks or anything, that you just sit or stand and perceive it directly. Sometimes it happens being in nature. Sometimes it happens as a result of devotion. Sometimes it happens as a result of selfless work. But it is an actual experience. And when I say experience, it is something that the heart can feel. We have the most powerful faculty that we have is the faculty of feeling. It can be empowering. It can be overwhelming when that faculty of feeling really kicks in. And at the heart of Hinduism, at the very basic tenets of its founding, says that the highest goal is for the individual to experience that oneness, that experience of divinity, of God. So the true founders of Hinduism are anybody that has experienced it. And that's why the answer necessarily is ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
And because the supremacy of experience, if you will, occupies a very central place. When Western philosophers began looking at Hindu philosophy as a formal philosophy, you know, they thought, what's the epistemology, meaning sources of knowledge, which is the kind of thing, questions you ask when you are looking at a new philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at it and decided that it was a formal philosophy. There wasn't just one. There were six of them. And yoga happens to be one of those. There are five others in addition to yoga. And then they were also a little confused by the fact that it roughly says something like this. Anything that you see is knowledge. Anything that you infer is knowledge. Anything that has scriptural authority is valid knowledge. However, direct experience supersedes all of that.
Ah.
So right from the beginning, there is this emphasis on an individual's direct experience. And therefore, this tree of Hinduism, if you will, has been watered and pruned again and again and again by masters through the ages. Every 100 years or so, there is another person that comes along and restates it using today's terminology and makes it relevant once again.
Uh-huh.
And this is the contradiction, or I don't know what the term is, but the odd thing is, remember I said there are things that are virtually unchanged.
Right.
And then it's being rediscovered or restated again and again. And the tradition that I belong to, my spiritual tradition, my meditation tradition, and so do you, the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, he's one of those masters that came and recast. And that was his mission, which you started the show with. That was his mission from his teacher, Sri Yukteswar, to come to the West and show the similarities of the teachings in the Bible to those of the sacred books of Hinduism.
All right. So does that bring us to the second question?
That brings us to the second question.
Is
the Bible?
A Bible of Hinduism. Now, my answer to that would be, is it the Bhagavad Gita?
Very good answer, and that's one of them.
One of them. Oh, there's more than one.
There is more than one.
Well, let me tell you how many years it took me to be able to pronounce Bhagavad Gita.
And you do a great job of it.
Well, but it wasn't easy. That's a difficult word for us Westerners to pronounce.
Yes.
And I just stumbled over it for a very, very long time. But Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita. But that's only one.
That's only one. And since you bring it up so eloquently, let me make a point. There is a trick to saying Sanskrit names.
Oh, good. Tell me.
The main trick is you have to open your mouth wide when you say them. So you can't speak with a stiff upper lip. Your lips are hardly moving, and that doesn't create Sanskrit.
Okay.
But if you want to say Bhagavad Gita, and your mouth has to open wide, there should be a fly that can go through your mouth. Bhagavad Gita.
Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, just
Bhagavad Gita.
Exactly.
And
feel free to aspirate the words. Get some emphasis. So you can start with a weak sounding B. You can say Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really want those Sanskrit things kicking in, and you have to aspirate to be Bhagavad Gita. If there's something in front of you, like that scene in the movie My Fair Lady, he teaches her to say H,
right.
And the candle flame moves every time she says, I forget what the phrase is, Hampton, Hereford and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly happen.
Right.
And it's that aspiration, Bhagavad Gita. That kind
wonderful.
Of gets it going.
All right, wonderful.
Oh, that's a little detour for you Sanskrit geeks out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, the most authoritative And in fact, this is even the definition of Hinduism, is that you follow these books that I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
They are called the Vedas, V-E-D-A-S. And Veda simply means truth. It's a fancy...
Did you say V-A-D-E-S?
V-E.
V-E, that's what
D-A-S,
I thought.
Vedas.
V-E-D-E-S, Vedas. Okay.
So there is, of course, there's not one of them in true Hindu tradition. You guys should be getting a sense of this by now. There is four of them.
Four, okay.
Yeah. And those are... Let me toss out a few terms that listeners may have heard. Vedanta, Upanishads, Yoga, Karma, Dharma, Nirvana, Mantra. They all come directly from they all come directly from the Vedas.
Because all of those words, of course, are familiar, I think, to many of us.
Yes. So they come directly from the Vedas, and that is kind of the let me say it in a formal way, that one would be considered a Hindu if they follow the Vedic teachings.
Okay.
And the Bhagavad Gita is a latter day commentary of one great master, Krishna, on the teachings of the Vedas.
Okay, all right.
And in fact, the claim made in the Bhagavad Gita about its own place is exactly what I said, that it claims to be a commentary on the Vedas.
A commentary on the Vedas. All right. Vedas, so it's like the Vedas came first.
Yes. Yes.
All right. All right, that makes sense. I understand that now. Cool.
Okay. Next question.
Is there a Vatican equivalent?
Is there a Vatican equivalent? And again, the answer is...
Well, the thing that popped in my mind, I have no idea, but the only... Because I think of the Vatican as a building, a place. Of course, the Taj Mahal came into my mind. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that... Actually, I don't really think I even know what that really... I mean, I know what it is, but do I really know what it is? Not really.
Right. No, it's not the Taj Mahal.
It's not the Taj Mahal. That's the only building I know, I guess.
And the reason why one might come up short on the answer for that is, well, there isn't one.
Oh, okay.
Or there are many.
There are many. Okay.
Remember, I said we'll be making such statements again and again. So the answer is, it depends.
It depends. Okay.
From a tradition perspective. Well, at its most refined, let me restate the concept Vatican in a slightly different way.
Mm-hmm.
If one is a Hindu, where would be the place that they would go on a pilgrimage?
Yeah.
And, you know, that is certainly one way of looking at the Vatican or Mecca or any of those, the one place. The other way, of course, is as an administrative headquarters of the organized aspect of the religion. And I won't talk about that too much. I'll just mention it in a moment. But at least in terms of a pilgrimage, where would a Hindu go? Again, the answer is, well, depends. But really, it would be... You'd go to a couple of sacred places in the Himalayas. They're not a big deal. They're not huge buildings. They are very austere structures, hard to get to. Today it takes 2 days of travel to get there. And you know, you have to, it's a hard journey, and the main attraction of those places is simply the magnetism that's with them. One is called Badrinath and the other is called Kedarnath, and those are, you know, just
the actual locations
in the Himalayas. They are in wonderful valleys at the headwaters of glacial streams. It's got all of that stuff going. Mm. And, you know, and the feeling is not unlike how you'd feel when you are in the presence of extraordinary natural beauty. Mm. That there is a certain divine magnetism associated in being in the midst of the most effusive aspect of creation, which is nature.
Uh-huh.
And that And the third place of pilgrimage is a site along the Ganges River. In India, it's called the Ganga River, and that's called Banaras. So if you had to pick a place where everybody has to go for a pilgrimage, one of these would be it.
Banaras. The other two.
Yeah. So what is the Vatican? Really depends. And this is kind of the reason why Hinduism is so diverse, or this is a symptom of the diversity of Hinduism, mm-hmm. is it's really to each its own, as long as a few things are consistent. And the things that are consistent are the direct experience and the path of self-realization, meaning that we are responsible for our experience of the truth. So that's another consistent one. And the concepts of karma and reincarnation and dharma. That's within those things. There is one story that I'd like to tell in my class. The city I grew up in, Bangalore, which happens to be the center of all the software. It's the Silicon Valley of India. And there is a church there. It's a very famous church. It's been around for about 180 years. It's a marvelous building. Bangalore used to be a British cantonment or a garrison. It was there because army wanted a place to be. And there's a church there. And among Hindus, there is a belief that if you go and pray in that church, then you'll be able to conceive. That if you're having trouble conceiving, and you go and make an offering to Mother Mary in that church, and then you will conceive. So Hindus flock to that church because there is, at least to the Hindu mindset, that is also a temple, and you just go there, and as long as we are living out in the material world, you want something, and if you get more benefit out of this temple, why not? And you just go there. And even in my own extended family, my sister-in-law went there, and this is how I know about this entire story. Uh-huh. Is she said, okay, we're going there on Christmas Eve because it's supposed to be very powerful. So there is one God, many paths.
Well, it's interesting to me that you said this particular church that seems to have some relationship to fertility and so forth, and that if you go there, you said, if you go there and pray to Mother Mary, but Mother Mary usually is more associated with the concept of Christianity, not Hinduism, but so we pray to Mother Mary in Hinduism as well?
Not formally. It's easier to think of it as the Hindu finds no contradiction in going to a church and praying to Mother Mary, because she is also a manifestation of divinity. Buddhism, where normally looking at it from here, from the West, we think of it as a separate religious tradition.
Right.
I realized that only after I landed here in the US. Growing up there, Buddhism was just another doctrinal variant within the larger spiritual stream in India. In fact, Buddha is considered one of the lights in the Hindu pantheon.
Oh, okay. So growing up, Buddhism to you was just a variance of Hinduism. It was just one of the, which is what you've been talking about.
Right. So there is an encompassing aspect to it, where there is a quotation in one of the Vedas, and I want to make sure I get it right. Translated from Sanskrit, it says, "Truth is one, and the wise call it by many names."
Truth is one, And the wise call it by many names.
Yes.
Wow, that's quite profound.
Yeah, and that kind of captures what diversity means within the Hindu context, and therefore why Hinduism is kind of a artificial name given to a set of traditions that are really far more than what can be captured by that.
Mm-hmm. That's beginning to make sense to me now. Fascinating.
Yeah. So, since the title of the class I give and here as well is Sacred Secrets, I feel obligated to say at least one sacred secret.
Oh,
or perhaps two, because it's because it's in the plural. So are we ready?
Uh-huh, yes.
Let me ask another provocative question.
Okay.
What came first? Creation or our ability to be aware of creation?
What came first, creation or our ability to be aware of creation? Boy, you know, that really is, because the first, when you started to say what came first, of course I saw it, heard chicken and the egg sort of thing, but it's the same sort of thing.
It is the same sort of thing.
Well, if we weren't created first, how would we then would it make any difference to recognize? So one would think creation comes first, but I don't know.
Well, it's a
is there a definitive answer there? Or is there a secret there somewhere?
There is the Vedic answer. So let me make a slight transition and use the word Vedic as much as possible.
Okay.
Instead of Hindu, because of all the reasons that
right.
we just went through. So science says, and we intuitively assume that there was. Let me just talk about science and leave intuition aside for a moment. That there was the Big Bang, and there was the soup of subatomic particles, in Big Bang there was the light first and the soup of subatomic particles and hydrogen and galaxies and stars and Earth and carbon and life forms and dinosaurs, and at some point there was a very specific faculty of awareness, and the official name for it is that awareness is an emergent phenomenon, meaning something that happens spontaneously when the conditions are just right. And that's one way or another we subscribe to this because we are schooled in this. And the Vedic answer to this is entirely different. So let me tell a creation story.
Okay.
It's a very charming story. The creation story is that in the beginning there was just a vast ocean of milk.
Okay.
And this existed forever, and it extended forever. So time and space existed forever, extended forever. Vast ocean of milk. And suddenly, in that formless ocean of milk, came a baby. And the baby's name was Vishnu. And from the navel, from the belly button of this baby, came a lotus flower. And on the lotus flower was seated the creator, Brahma. And following the orders of his master, Vishnu, he started the process of creation. Charming little story.
Yeah.
And you'll find this baby sleeping on the ocean of milk. Wonderful photos. Wherever you go in India, you can. You walk by any temple.
So this is not really like our Garden of Eden, but
not really. Although there is, you can begin to sense some vague similarities there. But let me break down the story a little bit.
Okay.
Because this is this is filled with all kinds of symbolism. So the ocean of milk, milk in the Indian way of saying things, always refers to the faculty of discrimination, of one of awareness. And so milk represents this eternal consciousness that was always there. And calling it eternal is already shortchanging it, because eternal means beginning and end. So it's just consciousness. And this eternal consciousness had the desireless desire to create. And the form of that is represented by the baby Vishnu. And it's a baby, meaning there is really no... there is a certain encompassing innocence to creation. And from it, the mechanics of creation is the lotus and the Brahma and the creator. But what caused it is the consciousness. The consciousness was still formless, eternal, infinite. And the vibrations on the surface of consciousness started the process of creation.
Wow.
So Vedas have a very direct, unambiguous answer. Which came first, consciousness or creation? Consciousness came first.
Yeah.
And that's where we are going.
Wonderful. All right, so let's ponder that. You know, that actually brought it all together, that right, consciousness came first before creation. That does it for me. Okay, so in order to stay on the air here, take care of our advertisers. Remember, without them, there's no us. So listen, pay attention, support them, and thank them. Animal World continues. More about the sacred secrets of Hinduism with Morley Van Control. Straight ahead, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Here's a thought to consider from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga. With the love and care you offer your pets, what about another important pet project, finding happiness? But how do you find happiness? Money? Health? Love? Or millions of people are finding that the regular practice of meditation or yoga can brighten your life with an inner satisfaction and contentment that no possession, position, or title can give. Find our schedule of classes and events at anandawashington.org. That's ANANDA Washington.org.
Have you heard about energy balancing for animals? Elite master of the bioenergetic synchronization technique, Nels Rasmussen, has been creating transformations in health, mobility, and athletic performance in dogs, cats, and horses for over 30 years. To learn more, you can visit online, NelsHealingMinistry.com, or call 425-238-2668. That's 425-238-2668.
Would you like to access portals of possibilities for transformation, consciousness, expansion, and new experiences of health and well-being? Ancient knowledge and new science tell us that everything manifests from vibratory frequencies. Jude and Paul Ponton are experts in the field of vibrational alignment and harmonic shifting. They're also co-authors of Acutonics for Dogs and Cats and Acutonics from Galaxies to Cells, Planetary Science, Harmony, and Medicine. They can assist you in shifting frequencies for personal health, aligning and balancing your energy or the energy of your home, property, or workspace. Jude and Paul can work with you remotely, at their office, or on site if you live in the Seattle area. They also teach classes in the Acutonic Sound Healing System. Check out their website, whispering-dragon.com. That's whispering-dragon.com for descriptions of services. Or call 206-706-2836. That's 206-706-2836. You can even email them at resonate@whispering-dragon.com for information or to schedule sessions.
Hi, this is Martha Norwalk, host of Animal World, and I've got a question for you. Do you or anyone you know own a business, offer a service, or a product that does something good for animals, humans, or this planet? If the answer is yes, then I'd like to invite you to become a member of the Animal World family of advertisers. Lately, people are telling me they think radio advertising is exorbitantly expensive. Well, that can be true, but not on Animal World. Did you know that for as little as $45 a week, you can have two professionally written and produced commercials at no cost? cost to you running on the show? You also get a link to your website on the homepage of the Animal World website and two live interviews on the show. Frankly, you can't afford not to do this. So if you'd like to join our great Animal World family of advertisers, or if you need more information, go to www.marthanorwalk.com to send me an email or call me at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258. Come on, give me a call and join the family. We'd love to have you.
Broaden your horizons. You'll be amazed at all the topics we cover on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey, I'm Martha Norwalk. That was a pretty appropriate bumper. You'd be amazed at the topics that we cover, especially here on Animal World. We're educating and entertaining the human animal today here on Animal World. And before we get back to Morley and our sacred secrets of Hinduism and so forth, I just want to let you know, because you heard about the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga during the break, interesting class coming up here starting October 5th, three Wednesdays in October, Chakras, Doorways to Your Karma. So that kind of, Morley, wouldn't that kind of fit into what we're talking about today, because I know you've mentioned karma a number of times, and it's three Wednesdays beginning October 5th, 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Bothell location. And if you're interested, 425-806-3700. Woohoo! And you also heard about Animal World. If anybody's out there that you have a business or a product or a service that does something good for animals, humans, or this planet, we would love to have you be a part of Animal World. And you can contact me directly. And we have an even better deal than that little ad says. New advertiser special. You can get an ad on the show for just $26 a week. Can't not afford to do that. Really important. So if you'd like to be a part of the Animal World family, interview on the show and link some on the website and your events on current events, send me an email, animalworldlive@hotmail.com, or you can call me directly at 360-217-7258. All right, we are going to get back to our subject at hand. Morley Venkatro, the director of Ananda Hatha Yoga Teacher Training Program, instructor of yoga and teacher of wonderful classes at Ananda, of course, is doing our radio version here of the Sacred Secrets of Hinduism and the Lineage of Yoga. And I was kind of out there when we finished up the last segment. We were talking about consciousness first and then creation, which really, logically makes sense to me. So where do we go from there?
Well, there is a interesting conundrum in science, and it's been around the last, about 100 years or so, slightly less, something like that. And it goes by various names, and one of the most common entertaining name for it is Schrodinger's cat. And it was
Schrodinger's cat?
Schrodinger's cat. Erwin Schrodinger is a German physicist.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted to capture this conundrum in a very easy metaphor. So he came up with this Schrodinger's cat. And the essence of that conundrum is that it turns out that according to the best science that we have, if you have a cat in a closed box somewhere, and then what's the best way to say it? Let's say there is a vial of a drug, and it can randomly, that drug can be administered to the cat or not.
Uh-huh.
And based on that, the cat is either alive or not alive. Then it turns out that until we actually observe, open the cage and observe, according to the best science that we have, the cat is, get this, neither alive nor dead. It's impossible to say.
Huh.
And again, one more of those charming stories And if you examine this, you subject it to the rigors of science and work through all the equations, what it seems to be saying in a very fundamental way is that the act of being aware of the universe is what makes the universe exist.
Oh.
So consciousness, awareness. And this is, I cannot emphasize how big of a conundrum this is. All the equations work fine, but when you go to the why instead of how, then you really run up against this. So the Vedic ruminations, Vedic experiences are beginning to be found in other systems of examination. That science seems to be slowly heading to a place where it's forced to give primacy to the act of observation, of measurement, of awareness.
Well, it sounds like one of the things, like in our culture, if a tree falls in a forest and there's nobody there, does it make any noise?
Does it make any noise?
It's sort of the same sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very much a...
So if there's no one there to hear it, is there noise?
And of course, that philosophical problem can be thought about in many ways, but in this particular context, if one isn't aware, then it, in a very real sense, it does not exist.
Well, and there's something to be said for that, because many times going through life, I don't know how to describe this. One will say, if you don't consciously in your left brain know that something exists, you won't see it.
Yes.
And I've experienced that on a practical physical level as well as an intuitive level.
Mm-hmm. So awareness, consciousness, occupies the central spot to the extent that is the definition of God, of formless spirit, is this eternal awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes off from there and says that every aspect of creation has stamped within it the eternal awareness, the presence of God. And that's, in the Christian tradition, that's the Christ consciousness. And in the Hindu tradition, it's called as the Kutastha Chaitanya. That's the official Sanskrit term for it. But that's in all meditative practices, we lift the gaze and look at the spiritual eye, at the point between the eyebrows.
Yes.
And in the human body, that's the location of this primeval, eternal awareness, the star of the east, the star that was seen in the east. They all refer to the same thing. And
to the center of the forebrain, or the point between the eyebrows.
Yes, yeah. And there is so much. I'm also pursuing my PhD in yoga, and part of my research is the physiological aspects of yoga. Uh-huh. And one of the things they are finding with any number of MRI studies is that long-term meditators have an aspect of their neocortex, the higher aspect of the brain, that are more active than in non-meditators. And the official name for this part of the brain is called MPFC, medial prefrontal cortex. And among many of the higher functions that we have, those concerned with empathy and being aware of things around us are centered in the MPFC. So there is, sometimes I like to say in many of my classes that we are in the midst of a revolution of some sort, a revolution of understanding, a revolution of approach to how we think about things that are outside of us. And the tricky thing about being in a revolution is you don't know that you are in one when you're in the midst of it.
Uh-huh.
It's history and hindsight that tells us, that was a revolution.
That was a revolution. Yeah.
But in the midst of it, it's just confusion. that's the predominant narrative of being in a revolution, is that there are so many different ways of thinking about this. But anyway, coming back, the main sacred secret, so to speak, is consciousness is the most archetypal, archaic, original reality. And let me ask another question, because I want to take that and relate it directly to yoga.
Uh-huh.
Say you want to build a table. Uh-huh. You know, this is your garage project. You want to build a table.
Okay.
How would you begin? Where does that act of creativity, where does that begin?
Well, usually in the mind.
It usually begins as a thought.
You're
kind of lying down. It's Sunday afternoon. You got nothing to do. You're completely content. You're prepared for tomorrow. And in that static, unmoving mind arises a desire to make a table. And then the change, the physiological change, is palpable. And if you're perhaps reclining, you're lying on the couch, and then you suddenly sit up, because that's the thought animates us. The thought makes the energy move. And then you run down to the garage and pick up your tools and start building the table.
Right.
So how we create mirrors how we are created. Uh-huh. God created man in his own image, and thus we reveal our divine nature. Is that creation begins with a thought. This is why in the Hindu tradition it's said that creation is but a dream of God.
Uh-huh.
That it begins as a thought, and that results in vibrations. That the thought, that the ocean of milk that was still heretofore, begins to move with the thought of creation. And that creative vibration becomes more, let me just use a scientific term somewhat inaccurately, but it should make sense in the metaphorical way. That vibration gets faster and faster, denser, if you will. It's like looking at the at fan blades rotating, that when it's rotating fast, it feels like it's solid, not three different blades.
Right.
And in the Vedantic view, creation is just that. It's the underneath the matrix of creation are vibrations.
Yeah.
Now, let's explore that a little bit more from two different perspectives. We'll talk about what vibrations mean in a minute. But if consciousness is the most underlying reality of all of creation, then what would be the goal? Where are we going? What is our ultimate goal? And the Vedas give you a very simple answer. It says to become one with that consciousness. And the term for becoming one, or taking two things that are separate and harmonizing them, synchronizing them, the official term for it is yoga. That's
okay.
Literally what yoga means.
Because usually the definite union.
And it is union in this sense, that the wonderful faculty of awareness that we have, that awareness is mostly centered in the external body. It is right now, perhaps, I am aware of my nose, I am aware of my voice, I'm aware of the fact that I need to say the right things, and so on. And Vedas say that if you take that awareness, which is an extraordinarily powerful faculty, and direct it away from creation, that go inward, retrace, reverse the process of creation, go from material to energy, back to thought, back to no thought, awareness, then that is the goal of life. And therefore, the most fundamental technique of yoga is being aware. These days, it's called mindfulness. It's actually a wonderful term which captures it. But the fundamental technique of meditation, no matter which tradition you come from, is refining, increasing, focusing your awareness. And that's why yoga sometimes has been called the science of the mind.
Uh-huh.
So where does yoga come from? Yoga comes all the way from the most hoary, most ancient sources of Sanatana Dharma, the Hindu tradition.
Yes. And then, of course, there's all the different aspects of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sounds like a good time to catch up with our advertisers for the last time in this hour. And then we continue with more of the sacred secrets of Hinduism and the lineage of yoga with Morali Venkatro in the studio. Stay right where you are. Animal World continues. Kathy, did we get a Missing Link winner? Oh, we did not. Okay, so Missing Link is on the table. If you would like to claim it, 425-373-5527 or 888-298-5569. Animal World continues straight ahead right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Ever wonder what your pet is thinking, why they do certain things, or how they're adapting to a change in the household? Darcy Pariso, animal intuitive medium and Reiki master, can help you with all of those things. Darcy can help you connect with your pet or other animal, here or in spirit. She'll also share messages including your pet's past lives and soul purpose. Clients say Darcy's readings are so much more than they expected and result in a deeper bond with her pets. Contact Darcy at darcypariso.com. That's Darcy Pariso, P-A-R-I-S-O.com. Or call 425-280-5132.
Coming up September 26th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, science and environmental journalist Mary Ellen Hannibal returns to discuss her latest book. Citizen Scientist is the story of how one woman rescued herself from grief. Along the way, her recovery inspired her to take a different look at loss in the world at large, resulting in a blueprint for action based on a new kind of science that may finally prepare Earth for our children. Tune in Mondays at noon Pacific, right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hi, this is Martha. Did you know that besides hosting Animal World, I'm also an animal behavior therapist and trainer with more than 40 years of professional experience? I work with you privately in your home or over the phone to help you understand your animal friends and resolve whatever behavior, training, or healing problems you've got going on. Most of my expertise is with cats and dogs, but I sometimes work with other types of animals as well. So whether it's puppies or kittens, adult dogs or cats, or elderly animal issues, I can help. Cats not using the litter box? Biting or scratching you or your furniture? Maybe they're fighting with each other or waking you up at night. I've got answers. Dogs barking too much, jumping, or dragging you around the block on your walk? Does he have separation anxiety or chew up stuff he shouldn't? I've got answers. Whatever's going on with your animal friends, I will help you fix it. I am more than reasonably priced and often need to see you only once. I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so give me a call and bug my voicemail if you need immediate attention. You'll find me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258, and I'd love to hear from you.
Get your daily dose of variety. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Hey, y'all, I'm Martha Norwalk, and boy, we're winding down the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World already, but you can find us here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And be sure and check out our friends at Whispering Dragon Center in Seattle, Jude and Paul Ponton. They come in here every couple of months and do their great harmonic energy shifting. Whispering-dragon.com is their website. And Also, Dr. Nils Rasmussen, check out his website, www.nilshealingministry.com. Look at the testimonials, get a free patient assessment. Send that in. He'll give you a call, do a free evaluation. And before we get back to our subject today, we're going to take advantage of it being close to the top of the hour and not having a whole lot of time left. So we're going to take care of current events. Alrighty, speaking of entertainment, I've got one more class to do at East-West Bookshop. Will be this Wednesday evening. It's the second part of my Understanding Your Animal Friends, but it stands alone if you've missed the communication part, or maybe you've done the communication part with me before and you've missed the human-to-animal transference. That's the title of this week's class, The Human-to-Animal Transference, Learn How Your Physical, Mental, and Emotional Energy Affects Your Animals and How to Deal with It. Also, more tools to clear the channels, so to speak, so you can better communicate, receive information from your animal friends. This Wednesday at East West Bookshop in Seattle, it's from 6:30 to 9 p.m., and the cost for the class is only $26. So give East West a call, make a reservation, or just show up. East West phone number is 206-523-3726, 206-523-3726. All right, Darcy Pariso, our wonderful animal world, animal communicator, intuitive, medium, Reiki master, has got communication classes coming up. And gosh, she came to my class this last Wednesday, and our classes really work together very well. I come and do my classes and then do hers. You can go even farther. She's got new animal communication classes in two locations. Talk to the Animals, 101 and 102. At Intraspace Seattle, that's October 15th, and the 102 is November 12th. Then it should be at the Daylight Healing Center in Edmonds on October 22nd, and then the Intraspace Intuitive Fairs, the next date is November 10th. Let's see. And, new action at Homeward Pet Adoption Center in Woodinville. You can catch your 12th man's best friend at Homeward Pet throughout October. Dog adopters sporting their blue and green will receive a 12% discount on adoption fees. So that's through the month of October at Homeward Pet. And then, of course, let's see. The 19th annual Black Cat Ball benefiting Perfect Pals up in Arlington is October 29th, www.perfectpals.org. And feral cat spay and neuter pickup transportation for spay and neuters in Snohomish County. The next pickup will be at the Sultan Red Apple Market on September 27th. I believe, and in Burien on September 20th, www.feralcatproject.org for more information. And the 7th annual Sexless Soiree benefiting Feral Cat Spay and Neuter Project is this coming up Saturday, September 24th, the Don James Center at Husky Stadium. And it's an auction and great food, wine, celebration, www.feralcatproject.org. The Northwest Stream Center is having an open house next Saturday the 24th from 1 to 4 p.m. Adopt a Stream Foundation members, supporters, families, and friends are all invited. RSVP as usual, 425-316-8592. That's 425-316-8592. Or you can email aasf@streamkeeper.org. Let's see. Got the 14th annual Walk for the Animals benefiting Seattle Humane on Sunday, October 2nd at Green Lake. And you can register at seattlehumane.org for that. And I think that about covers all the pertinent stuff on current events for this week. And next week, encore presentation of Animal World, because it's my Sunday to go to the Ananda Meditation Temple in Bothell. And we're going to rerun our show from September 11th with Darcy Pariso. And you can listen to Darcy and I talk to the animals. And especially, well, you can hear all about what Bamboo had to say to Darcy about how she's doing and what we can do to help and so forth. And then 2 weeks from today, the first Sunday of October, going to be doing a shelter rescue sanctuary and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday, and hope that Aline Fortgain will be able to join us on that Sunday to fill us in on the latest on Bamboo and so forth. All righty, that look at that. It brings us right up against the top of the hour, so let's just close out hour number two, fire up hour number three, and then we'll get right back to Murali Venkatro and the sacred secrets of Hinduism and the lineage of yoga, educating the human animal today. And I think that covers it. All right, did we get a missing link? We did not get a missing link winner. So if you'd like to give Kathy a call while we switch hours out here, 425-373-5527 or 1-888-298-5569. Pick up your phone, give Kathy a call. We'd love to send you some missing link. And stay right where you are. Animal World continues straight ahead right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.